This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
So the story has broken, and you're a journalist, and your job is to tell the story and then follow up on it. What do you do? What's the basic footwork you need to do? What if the story has to do with a former ambassador of the United States from the Vatican? He is strongly suggesting, he is saying flat out, that the Pope, Pope Francis, knew about Cardinal McCarrick's indiscretions, knew about his sexual abuse and sexual harassment, and not only didn't do anything about it, but actively worked to promote Cardinal McCarrick. That's your story. What's next? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here, I guess.
Does this story, as it continues to unfold, have Woodward and Bernstein Pulitzer Prize potential?
Well, I would argue, yes, it does. But there's an even stronger analogy here if we're going to stick in the world of writing that turned into film. To me, the obvious parallel here is the Boston Globe Pulitzer and the Academy Award for Best Picture for the movie Spotlight. Because did you ever see Spotlight?
I did not, but I do understand the basic outlines of its plot.
Essentially, frankly, in my opinion, it's one of the two best journalism movies I've ever seen in my life. The other one being Shattered Glass, about the ethical scandals years ago at the New Republic, which focused on plagiarism. Spotlight is the story that, like in 2002, 2003, they published like 600 pieces that basically broke the child abuse scandal, the teenage abuse scandal, wide open in Boston. And the big idea was they decided, we're not going to just do an abuse story. We're going to focus on a problem that is systemic in the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Boston and in the church as a whole. The goal here is to take this scandal as high up as we can prove that it goes. And they ended up basically forcing the resignation of the then Cardinal of Boston and showed that there was indeed a legal system that was in place to hide all this. That, of course, is also the story of the recent Pennsylvania grand jury report. What seems to be getting lost now in the yelling and screaming at each other over the Vigano case is that essentially what we have here, again, is Spotlight all over. We have three levels of abuse, you know, with some rare cases or occasional cases featuring pedophilia. We have an overwhelming wave of cases based on ephebophilia, the ongoing sexual attractedness to and sexual activity with teenagers and children that are right on the doorstep of being teenage males. And then the new wrinkle here is we have this incredible Church Too, Me Too hashtag thing going on with the sexual harassment of seminarians by bishops, by people who were the directors of vocations in their seminaries, etc. But what has happened is something I've seen a few times in my career that's very interesting and distressing. The Vigano letter, of course, is not at its heart about Pope Francis. It points to mistakes and errors by all three of the most recent popes. And the last domino to fall in that sequence is Pope Francis. But essentially, the Vigano letter is a continuation of the story of the fallen cardinal, Theodore McCarrick, and repeatedly asks the question, how did this guy get away with it? You know, this is a question that you and I were talking about a couple of weeks ago. And we're all so caught up right now in the Vigano letter that we're missing the big point. We're missing the big idea, which is what seems to have lit the fuse for him to go public with this and to take this issue on is, ironically, the New York Times story exposing McCarrick. That's the first domino that fall. So what I'm beginning to wonder is, at what point will journalists, I imagine as a journalist that this is going on behind the scenes, but at some point, will we get back to investigating the McCarrick story? Let me put one more thing in this sequence. If you were doing the spotlight story way back when, what you would have wanted more than anything, if you couldn't get your hands on the actual documents, and of course, through legal processes, they eventually did get their hands on key documents. But if you couldn't get the document, what you wanted more than anything else was a member of the Catholic hierarchy with a lot of credibility who would have been in exactly the point to have seen all the documents. And then at that point, you want that person's testimony to what he saw and what he heard. Now, if you were going to parallel the McCarrick story and the cover-up of McCarrick at both the U.S. level and the level of the Vatican, if you were going to name a man who was in position to have seen what he has claimed to have seen and heard, that man would be the Vatican's ambassador to the United States. He would have been, let me stress, I'm not saying he's telling the truth. What I'm saying is that he was in the perfect position to see and hear what he has claimed to see and hear. Now, what I have stressed from the very first moment that I started writing about this back Sunday morning before going to Divine Liturgy, when I woke up with this on my mind after reading about it on Saturday night and I wrote something, I've been stressing documents. The Vigano letter says, if you want to know what happened, the documents are in the office of the U.S. ambassador from the Vatican in Washington, D.C., or the documents are at Rome. If anyone wants to prove me wrong, it will be extremely easy to do so. All they have to do is show the documents related to this case. I know they're there because I put them there, I wrote many of them, etc. So, where are the documents? Where are the discussions of the documents? The press has jumped off with a lengthy discussion of why not to believe Vigano in terms of his personal character, or he's a conservative, which of course automatically makes him unworthy of trust. All this stuff is being written about Vigano, who, by the way, has gone into hiding because he says he feels his life is in danger. He is saying, hey, disprove me. Pull out the documents and show the world that I'm lying. Now, I'm having trouble as a reporter and knowing people who know this man, I'm having trouble believing that he doesn't have trump cards. I truly believe he has made photocopies of some crucial documents, and that at some point I'm not going to be at all surprised if he pulls them out. He's already done that on one point of accusations against him. But this is all, in the end, not about Francis. This is really a continuation of the McCarrick story. Am I being semi-clear about that?
I believe so.
But if you want to know what the press thinks this is about, I've just put a piece up at Get Religion in which I found two passages. I know in radio it's not good to sit and read things at people, but I think these passages are so crucial. If you want to know what liberals think this is all about, Reuters just published the perfect piece to explain what all of this is about from the viewpoint of liberals. And first of all, from their perspective, it's all about Francis. And the lead of this Reuters story, which is a news story, not a piece of analysis or commentary, supporters of Pope Francis have rushed to his defense after a former top Vatican official launched an unprecedented attack on him, a move they say dangerously escalates a campaign to weaken his papacy by conservatives who condemn him as too liberal. One more thing to read. Francis's supporters say the accusations in Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano's 11-page public statement aim to pave the way, now listen carefully, for a conservative pope to succeed him who would reverse his openings to divorced and homosexual Catholics. Now, why that struck me so hard, that's a statement of what liberals are saying is why this whole case is important to them. But a right-wing Catholic who lives to hate Francis could not have written those two paragraphs better in terms of summing up exactly what they think Francis is all about. I mean, I'm still getting, because of the things I've written on the three major issues in this case and the fact that I play down to the third level of this scandal, the whole issue of the gay network or the homosexual network, I've still got people sending me angry emails saying that, you know, I should be writing that it's all about the gays, it's all about gay priests, it's all about gay bishops, it's all about gay cardinals, it's all about the gays. Here is a liberal article that is saying that to the defenders of the Pope, what they're worried about the most is that they'll lose progress on divorce and homosexual Catholics. A right-winger couldn't have phrased the priorities of this papal administration better than that, which strikes me as highly ironic. In the same piece, I quoted a conservative piece in the Catholic Herald that noted that from the perspective of this author, Vigano's letter is about four things. It's the fact that he told Francis in June 13 about Cardinal Theodore McCarrick's depravities. So McCarrick. And yes, he told Francis, but McCarrick. That the Congregation for Bishops had a thick folder detailing them, detailing the case against McCarrick. That Pope Benedict had restricted McCarrick to a life of prayer and penance and response, McCarrick. And that Francis subsequently rehabilitated McCarrick, despite all of that. From the conservatives that I'm hearing from, who I would kind of call the conservatives who aren't yelling and screaming, yes, they are concerned about Francis's role in this. They are primarily concerned about the McCarrick case. How did Theodore McCarrick get to the positions of power he occupied, even though this thick dossier of his sexual activities and at the seminary and elsewhere, even though that was well known, as we've been talking about for weeks, how did he get to where he got? Who defended him and promoted him along the way? And even at the end of his career, who essentially told Francis, unless you think Francis acted on his own, and I haven't said anyone see that, who was the network that then defended McCarrick to the bitter end? So, in one reading of this, is this scandal about Francis, or is this essentially a scandal about McCarrick? When you look at what Vigano actually wrote, this seems to primarily be a scandal about McCarrick and the network around him. And that touches Francis. But what this is primarily about is McCarrick. That was long and that was rambling, but I hope it made sense.
So I'm going to let my cynicism show through a little bit here. With the press kind of distracted by the Francis angle of this thing, and maybe they're purposefully distracting themselves toward Francis, who knows, it essentially it sounds like what you're saying here is if that's the way that journalism is going to go here, it's going to never be anything more than a he said story. And here's my cynicism, Terry. Pope Francis seems, he's very media savvy. He seems to kind of know that. So he's just going to not say anything. If he doesn't say anything, there's nothing essentially to report here.
He has no incentive to take the documents out. Except if the documents say what McCarrick's defenders say they say, and Pope Francis's says they say, why not take them out and show Vigano's wrong? In other words, they have, Vigano has said, these people have massive folders full of material. If I'm lying, they have all of the evidence in their control to show I'm lying. Now, I think you're basically right about the media's attitudes toward Francis. They've invested a lot in him as a popular folk hero, you know, in this age. We've also begun to see language in the press and some articles that were, frankly, analysis and commentary pieces that ran as news. They're beginning to see the word reform again. In other words, the conservatives are trying to stop Francis from reforming the church. Now, what's interesting about that, of course, is what does the word reform mean? You want to take a shot at what it means if you look it up in a dictionary?
Well, I'm going to say that reform is trying to correct or to make right again what has gone wrong, something to that effect.
Yeah. When I started looking for a definition, I found this one online, jumped out at me from like the second site I opened. Reform, the noun, the improvement or amendment of what is wrong, corrupt, notice the word corrupt, unsatisfactory, etc. Thus, Francis is, to the press, someone who is fixing things that are wrong and corrupt. Yet, what he's best known for, of course, is the attempt, it appears, to change Catholic teaching at the level of the Catechism on the crucial subject of divorce. We have this massive fight at the Vatican to the point of people accusing him of heresy, another thing to which he has never responded. But the key is the minute you say that someone is out to reform something, instead of saying he's out to change it, you've already put, in this case quite literally, you've already put one man in the white hat and have said, this is the good guy. The things that he's fighting are evil, and he is trying to reform them. Now, I would not call that a neutral framing of this current debate. But that's why it's so important to remember, in the end, is the press going to let the McCarrick story go? I mean, remember, the New York Times broke that story. Is there anyone out there still trying to figure out what happened in the career of Theodore McCarrick? If people in the United States, if there are journalists who want to go spotlight on this thing, and they chase, just like they did with Spotlight in Boston, if they chase this issue of the cover-up of abuse and harassment, and you say, we're interested in the system that protected it and hid it, that was the whole purpose of the Spotlight investigation. If you apply those same journalistic standards to McCarrick, does the press now have the guts to do that? Now, one of the people I admire the most in all of this, and I mean in the field of journalism about Catholicism, is the man I always refer to as John L. Allen Jr. of Crux. I call him the omnipresent. He just seems to be everywhere when it comes to big Catholic stories. He wrote a commentary that ended like this. In essence, the Pope took the no-comment option, though he said more than enough to suggest he doesn't find the document credible. However, he did not engage the heart of the matter, which is what he knew about McCarrick and when he knew it. Let's be clear. This is an accusation of a pope. This is an accusation that a pope was personally involved in a sex abuse cover-up from a former Vatican official who was in a position to know. If anyone thinks media outlets around the world aren't going to pursue that story with maximum aggressiveness, knowing that bringing down a pope would be infinitely bigger than what the Boston Globe did in 2003 by bringing down Cardinal Bernard Law, winning a Pulitzer Prize and inspiring a Hollywood movie in the process, they're delusional. Now, the one factor in there is that pope would be Francis, not Benedict, not John Paul II, not someone who put out the birth control encyclical. To me, I think we have no idea whether the press is going to go after McCarrick now, whether they're going to do the McCarrick story all the way through. Because if they do, that's going to lead back to these documents. That's going to lead back to Vigano as a person in a position to offer strong testimony. And to prove Vigano wrong, they're going to have to turn to the documents, not just character assassinate him. So I headlined my piece I just put up, Documents, Documents, Documents. It's time to get back to the McCarrick scandal. Take Francis and set him aside for a moment. Go back and figure out the McCarrick scandal.
There have been voices chiming in almost on an hourly basis. A little earlier today, the Archbishop of San Francisco wrote a letter that said, look, from what I know, and I don't know everything, we need to listen to Vigano. He says he claims to know some things, but not all things. And mm-hmm. he said, we have to do an investigation of what Vigano has said about McCarrick. And then this is just simply brand new. Apparently, LifeSite, a conservative website,
yes.
is reporting that a source has spoken to the National Catholic Register, no small outlet there.
But it is a conservative outlet, an openly conservative one.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And they're reporting that Pope Emeritus Benedict has confirmed the claim that he did act during his tenure to discipline ex-Cardinal Theodore McCarrick in response to accusations of sexual abuse. And
well,
again, that's only according to sources.
Yeah. There's a debate about that, unless you're looking at a story that's newer than what I saw a couple of days ago. That's actually more nuanced. The Register never said that Benedict confirmed it. They said that people in Benedict's office said he had disciplined him, even said but had trouble remembering all the details.
Right.
And crucial to the Vigano letter was that a lot of people have said, well, how come if he was disciplined, he continuing doing X, Y, and Z? Well, that's the whole idea. The point of the Vigano letter is that he ignored, and the cardinals protecting him ignored what the Pope said, which fits into the old report and rumor that Benedict resigned because he knew he was no longer in charge at the Vatican and that there were things he could not do. In other words, some people are beginning to hint, as they have hinted in the past, that Benedict lost a showdown with the cardinals who were protecting McCarrick. So, yeah, layer after layer after layer in all of this.
So I'm going to put you back into the editor seat, and you need to issue some assignments. Where do the media need to go from here to get to the real story?
Well, I published the address of the U.S. Embassy of the Vatican today and suggested that some people go knock at the door, basically. I think it would be interesting. Of course, the church doesn't have to give up its own personal documents. But what's really interesting here is the U.S. Catholic bishops have said they favor an independent investigation into this. And once again, as several people have noted, what's an investigation of the McCarrick case? What do they need? They need documents, and they need the testimony of people who were in a position to know what happened. The main person you would have wanted is who was the U.S. ambassador to the Vatican who would have handled that case. that would be Vigano. Well, we already have his testimony. So we're back. Do the U.S. Catholic bishops have the chutzpah to go after the documents? Do the U.S. Catholic bishops have a right to see the documents that are in the Vatican Embassy in Washington, D.C.? That would be a really interesting question. They probably had to be granted permission, and who would give them the permission? The Pope. Wheels within wheels.
How would you evaluate the coverage so far with about a minute here, Terry?
The coverage originally of the McCarrick scandal was extraordinary. It was amazing. It was detailed. The minute it seemed to point to some other men in red hats who are very prominent and are very beloved by the Catholic left, it began to slow down. Then the Vigano document hits, at which point most of the coverage has been highly, highly favorable to Francis and has mainly been character assassination and investigations of who Vigano is and why he did this horrible thing. Now, I have seen, in addition to the Allen statement, I've seen some other people saying, we have no idea what the press is working on behind the scenes. We will know none of that until it's either published or not published. The cynics are saying McCarrick is an old man. They're basically going to draw this out and wait for him to die, at which point you're going to have this new code or this new effort to hold bishops more responsible, and nobody by name will be punished. So the cynics think we get out of this with no other people involved in the system having to pay a price for this, unless, like the New York Times outing McCarrick, we have news coverage that proves points, documents, and testimony at some of these other people in red hats. So I don't know. I have no way of knowing what the press is working on right now, but I know it has to have something to do with the documents.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.